from deep inside your radio.
So I have gotten an email from somebody who says he likes the Mozart. Okay. So it's 1-1. Oh, before I forget, ladies and gentlemen, I was in Washington, D.C. this week. That's right, our nation's capital. I was there to deliver a remarks, be part of a panel on a an arguably imaginary topic, freedom of speech in wartime. And I noticed something interesting. Boeing, you know, the airplane manufacturer, they build planes in Seattle and Long Beach. I think they may have one other location, but Seattle and Long Beach are the ones I know about. And yet they have this big building with their name on it very near the Capitol building. Isn't that odd? They must think Seattle's in that Washington. I don't know. I don't get it. Anyway, a member of the panel with me was Fox Television commentator, Fox News Channel commentator. I'm going to put all those in quotes, in air quotes. Fox News Channel commentator, Bill O'Reilly. And about halfway through the panel, he started looking at his watch. Noticeably enough that people in the audience remarked about it later to me. And then about two-thirds of the way through, he just announced, I've got to catch a shuttle. I'm going to leave now. Thank you. I'd like to look forward to doing this again. Good night. And he walks out of the room, walks off the little stage, the stage lit, and out of the room. And apparently onto the shuttle. I guess the plane. Although they do have very fast, wonderful fast trains from Washington to New York these days. But, you know, you had to catch the plane. Anyway, a correspondent from the local newspaper, which in that case happens to be a big newspaper, noticed that event, among others, at the panel. And the paper was preparing to write a little item about it. Just, you know, here's something nutty that happened. And Bill O'Reilly called the paper. I happen to know this. And screamed, "This is a BS story. They knew I was going to leave. If you print this, I'm calling Leonard Downey, the executive editor of said paper." Now, it just so happens, the gods of coincidence gave me this. I was on a panel with fellow cast members of a television program that I'm involved with in New York a few weeks earlier. And one of the cast members had to leave early to get to Long Island. And she notified the organizers early, just as Bill O'Reilly claims, "This is no story. They knew I had to leave." Well, the New York Post the next day made an item out of this cast member leaving early. But you see, she didn't call and threaten to call Leonard Downey, or whoever was the executive editor of the New York Post. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to keep your name out of the paper, call, yell, swear, and threaten to call the executive editor. That's good advice from Hello, Welcome to the Show. No, that's not spin. In this, babe.
Oh, petit homme, priez pour moi, sauvez mon âme de Flandon va. Sauvez mon âme, priez pour moi, priez pour moi, petit homme, sauvez mon âme. land on fire. Sauvez mon âme, priez pour moi, petit ange, sauvez mon
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this, oh, please go out and spend some money and keep the economy going edition of the show. I don't like I care. But I do care about this. A lot of people wrote emails to me, emails to me last week after the first Close Enough for Journalism segment, exclusively on this broadcast, saying, hey, man, didn't say hey, man. I'm interpolating that. Louisiana didn't elect senators before the 17th Amendment was passed, so Daniel Shore was right. If you weren't listening last week, you don't have no idea what I'm talking about. But take it from me, ladies and gentlemen. Every state in the union elected senators before the passage of the 17th Amendment. They just didn't elect them by popular vote. They elected them by vote of the state legislature. Okay? Look it up. Close enough for journalism this week, in the Sunday New York Times, taking Trent Lott at his word, Adam Clymer writes a piece about what kind of president Strom Thurmond might have made had his presidential bid under the Dixiecrat banner been successful. And the headline is, it's 1948, meet President Strom Thurmond. Of course, he ran for president in 48. He wouldn't have been president until, that's right, thank you, 1949. And on National Public Radio over the weekend, John Itzty, I believe, referred to the just-resigned prelate of Boston as carnal law. Cardinal law. That was him. I'm quoting him. Cardinal law. But I think he was right the first time. See, so you never know. By the way, the Archdiocese of Boston is still fixing to perhaps file for bankruptcy in the wake of the resignation of Cardinal Law. And they would coincidentally join in recent bankruptcy filings United Airlines. Now, sometimes, you know, firms, organizations that are in Chapter 11 reorganize, sometimes they merge. So it could be that the eventual result of the diocesan filing would be that all the prelates in Boston would be eligible for the Mile High Club. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for the apologies of the week, and you know what that means.
We're so sorry.
Well, we'll get to the obvious one in a moment. Because why should... Obviousness should wait, shouldn't it? Youngsters at a Christmas carol service were devastated when the Reverend Lee Rayfield told them Santa Claus was dead. Even parents at the service in Maidenhead in England were shocked to hear Mr. Rayfield say it was scientifically impossible for Santa Claus to deliver so many presents so quickly. Mr. Rayfield has admitted making a serious misjudgment in telling the story to children as young as five. He said, I did not realize how young some of them were, and I am sitting here now wondering how I managed not to realize. Even when I was there, I did not twig. I am mortified and appreciate I have put some parents in a difficult position with a lot of explaining to do. I love Christmas. Mr. Rayfield had also told the youngsters that the reindeer would burst into flames if they had to travel at the necessary speeds. It's true, but he's sorry. Richard Abdu, the CEO of Wisconsin Energy, based in Milwaukee. Earlier this fall, he sent a $250 check to the peace group Not in Our Name. As a result, his name was listed as one of the 30,000 endorsers of the group's anti-Iraq war statement, and he was identified as chairman of the board and president and CEO of Wisconsin Energy. He said the donation was strictly a personal one. Then right-wing radio talk radio host in Milwaukee got wind of his endorsement and criticized him for it. Charlie Sykes of WTMJ said the statement was an anti-American screed and drummed up a campaign against Abdu. 100 to 150 people contacted Wisconsin Energy. One longtime stockholder said he was selling his stock and warned about a possible stockholders' lawsuit. At first, Abdu stood his ground. I think every American has the freedom to state their views, he told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The negative comments kept coming. The newspaper editorialized against him in an editorial called "An Executive's Bad Decision." He's backed down. In an email to his employees, quote, "Subject, please accept my apology." Abdu wrote, "I deeply regret any misunderstanding, anger, and adverse publicity that have resulted. I've learned a valuable lesson." Cherie Blair, the wife of the British Prime Minister, joins the list. I'll tell you, it's pretty soon the list of people who haven't apologized is going to be pathetic compared to those who have. She had not known that convicted fraudster, as they call him in England, a convicted con man, Peter Foster, I say they like to say fraudster because it rhymes with Foster, had ever been to prison. She didn't know that. She said she was sorry if she had embarrassed anyone over an affair which has dominated the news in Britain for the past few days, obliterating talk of forthcoming war. Had she known the full details of Mr. Foster's past, the Prime Minister's wife said she would not have allowed herself to get into the situation. She was contacted through Foster's girlfriend, Carol Kaplan, who is the Prime Minister's wife's style guru. She's not yet apologized for having a style guru, however. Well, you know, plenty of time for that. And for the fourth time, Trent Lott has apologized. His first apology apologized for ill-chosen words. Then he went on Sean Hannity's radio show and Larry King's television show by telephone to apologize again for his remarks. If you missed this, he was at the 100th birthday dinner for Strom Thurmond and said if Thurmond should have been an elected president, Mississippi voted for him in 48, the whole country should have, then we could have avoided, quote, all these problems we've had over these years. Then he held a televised news conference last Friday and apologized even more. The president has criticized him. Over the weekend, Senator Don Nichols in the Senate became the first member of that body, Republican, to suggest that maybe Lott would have to give up his leadership of the Senate Republicans. But Lott's continuing to apologize. He's going to go on Black Entertainment Television on Monday to apologize. And now he's known for a couple of things, of course. He's known for a history of having supported segregation, having made the same offhand remarks he made about Strom Thurmond last week, 20 years ago. And he's also famous for being a member of a quartet of singing senators. And as I say, he's going on BET on Monday to apologize. And word has it he's going to appear on MTV Tuesday with the singing senators to continue the apologizing.
I have a statement, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'm sorry in the morning. I'm sorry in the night. I'm sorry in the dusky dark and in the TV light. I'm sorry in Mississippi. I'm sorry in D.C. Sorry is as sorry was. Sorry, sorry me. I'm sorry that I'm leader. I'm sorry that I'm led. Sorry that I've got this hairy helmet on my head. Sorry that I'm racist. Sorry that I'm not. Sorry I'm about to lose everything I've got. Now don't you want to stick with me? I'm sorry as a man can be. Civil rights, I forgot. Cast my vote against it and that's my lot. Strom Thurmond, just a joke. Must have slept for 40 years, I just awoke. Oh, I'm sinking and I'm sorry. Ignore me. I'm sorry I'm a southerner. I'm sorry I can read. Sorry I was born with the capacity to lead. I'm sorry I was speaking. I'm sorry that you heard. Sorry, sorry, sorry about every single word. I'm sorry that I'm crazy. I'm sorry that I drink. I'm sorry that I'm lazy. I'm sorry that I stink. I'm sorry that I'm growing. I'm sorry that I've grown. I'm sorry, 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 I've got problems of my own. I'm sorry I was ignorant. I'm sorry that I knew. I'm sorry, 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 I'm so very much like you. I'm standing here on bended knee. Sorry as a man can be. Now don't you want to stick with me? Sorry gonna set you free. Oh, I'm sinking and I'm sorry. Don't you want to just ignore me? Oh, I'm sinking and I'm sorry. Don't you want to just ignore me? Thank you.
So that's the Trent Lott on MTV this week. We have, of course, you know, we always get a preview of the stuff that's going to be on MTV. You know that about this broadcast. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, for the rest of this program, and then the last broadcast of the year, we'll be doing our annual year in rebuke. We look back in some amusement at some of the events over the past year. This, of course, being a palindromic year, the beginning and end are basically identical. But it was in the middle that some interesting stuff happened. For example, in New York City, there was a trial, Woody Allen versus his longtime producer friend, Gene Dumanian. Each of them arguing that they owed each other money. Gene's longtime boyfriend, international financier Jackie Safra, was involved. And Woody had testified at one point that he thought the whole thing was kind of like a, you know, it'd be amusing. He'd speculated that, you know, they'd have the trial during the day, and then he and Gene, longtime friends, still would go to dinner at night. It didn't turn out quite that way. It didn't turn out quite this way either.
Fade up on wide shot courtroom. Stoney's voiceover. I was on trial. Me. I mean, Himmler, the minute the war is over, he goes right back to making millions off Bayer aspirin or BMWs or something. But I'm on trial in my very own city. Actually, Janice and I were both on trial. We'd sued each other. Me. We'd never sue a fly. Now, suddenly, with the Knicks in the toilet and the Rangers playing golf, I was on the stand. Close up on Stoney Kepler. Voiceover continues. Not that I was doing such a bad job. I mean, one thing even my severest critics agree on. I'm a superb witness. I mean, but between my command of details, my wit, and my advancing vulnerability, I could be more devastating on the stand than Lizzie Grubman on an IV drip of sodium pentothal. But
Mr. Allen?
Yes, Your Honor.
The opposing counsel asked you a question. You're responding with some kind of strange monologue.
Too self-deprecating, you think?
Because just answer the question, please.
I know, but I'm a creative person. I answer creatively. The head has its reasons.
Go ahead, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Allen, did you agree to extend your contract with my clients past the first three movies?
That's absurd. Yeah, I mean, that's beyond Samuel Beckett. It's so absurd. I mean, it's beyond Ionesco. It's pure Dario Fo. I mean, I could never conceive of doing such a thing.
This isn't your signature on a contract extension dated May 25th, 1995?
It's, I'll tell you the truth. I think I may need laser eye surgery or something. I mean, I forget about those documents or whatever you're holding. I can barely make out your figure.
Mr. Allen, Please to tell the court, would you possibly be sexually interested in me?
Me? I mean, please, you're a smart, attractive girl in your mid-20s. I'm a tall, dashing goy in my early 30s. What could we possibly have in common?
Your Honor, request a 15-minute recess to confer with my client.
So ordered.
Tracking shot. We move through the front door of Le Cirque, past a guy in a tuxedo who swears he was with the resistance during the war, and settle on a banquette in the front of the room, where we discover Stoney and Janice picking at the amuse bouche. Janice was the sort of compulsively elegant and mysterious woman who always dressed as if she was on her way to Halston's funeral.
Well, thank you for at least calling me elegant.
Only in the stage directions.
Look, I just don't think it's any of your business.
I just want to know what you guys conferred about during the recess. I mean, what's wrong with that?
It's privileged. We're in a trial. Macy's doesn't tell gimbals.
Are you kidding? There hasn't been a gimbal since Giuliani was wiretapping John Gotti's schnauzer. Besides, look at us. We're just like we imagined. Tracy and Hepburn meet Court TV.
We are not. There's nothing cute about this. You're accusing Jackie and me of grand theft.
Look, we're friends. I mean, let's put the best face on it. Let's just say I'm accusing you of baby grand theft. Besides, what kind of a name is Jackie Safra? I mean, with a Q. That's not a producer. That's a stripper who works near Ben Gurion Airport.
Woody, this is stupid. The only reason I'm having dinner with you is because my attorney and I agreed that this was the only way to keep you from having dinner with her.
Good evening. May I take your order? Maybe start with a nice pike?
Rabbi Kitzler? What would I want with a bicycle at this time of night?
He said pike, Woody. Pike.
Mm. The chef made with the truffles on it. But look, you two, before I take your order, can I sit down with you and knock your heads together?
You see, Rabbi, I didn't make the reservation for three. I'd hate to lose this table. It's...
So, look, you two. Jean.
She's Janice in the film, and we pan to Janice as she sits fuming.
Woody, we're not making a movie.
Well, don't tell me. Tell the crew. They're out shooting exteriors.
Jean, you get something out of this arrangement. You get to write off fine cars and trips against the budgets of the films.
Well, there were a few times when we may have exceeded the bounds of fungibility.
And Woody, you get to make movies and cast younger and younger women as your love interests.
I'm just not good at writing parts for actresses over 25 anymore. I admit it.
Don't you two see that you have more to lose than to gain by continuing this silly lawsuit? For it is Rabbi Akiva observed in his commentaries on the Reb Ben Eliezer Devisor, a dispute which engulfs both participants cannot but ensnare them in moral quicksand, for the complainant and the complained against both have in common this.
I can't believe it, Gene. I cannot find one rabbi in all of Manhattan who goes against type. Maybe it's my fault for not thinking outside the phylactery.
Look, this is inappropriate. Tracy and Hepburn never submitted to binding arbitration by a religious cleric.
Wait. You didn't see the director's cut of Adam's Rib, obviously. There was a pedophile priest who brought them together in the last scene. You know what? Maybe after dinner, when the rabbi's finished, you could come over to my place, bring your attorney. We watch some of my beta tapes of the 72 Knicks.
I am not bringing over my attorney. She's young enough to be your other stepdaughter.
But that's just it. I mean, I thought she could be a friend for Sun Yi.
Woody, you know what we were doing during recess today? Staying in the ladies' room, laughing at you.
That's the good kind of staying in the ladies' room and laughing at me, though, right?
Maybe we should just order.
Okay, but one suggestion? That's treat, you know, because... Exterior night. Stoney walking down the block to his apartment building. Wider shot. Stoney's limousine trailing him down the street, just in case. Stoney's voiceover. Maybe I should have waited until the trial is over to be writing this. But I never forgot what Eli Zabar once told me. Stories are like brisket. Better fresh.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird. Here to stay is a new bird. And he sings a loud song as we go along. Walking in a winter wonderland. In a meadow we can build a snowman, then pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man, but you can do the job when you're in town. Later on we'll conspire as we dream by the fire, to face unafraid the dreams we made, walking in a winter wonderland. Pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man, but you can do the job when you're in town. Later on we'll conspire as we dream by the fire, to face unafraid the dreams we made, walking in a winter wonderland. It's a beautiful sight, we're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland.
This is Le Show, and one of the big stories of the year in the media world was the wooing by ABC of David Letterman to bring his late night show over to the Disney-owned network. It resulted willy-nilly in the end of the run on ABC of Politically Incorrect after Nightline, and it resulted in Ted Koppel staging a fairly public show of pique at ABC, at one ABC executive saying that Nightline was no longer relevant. In the short run, Ted ended up with a half hour after Nightline for another series of interviews. That's going to end next month. But in the long run, at least this broadcast speculated, I think we had tape to prove it, that there was there were plans, speaking of mergers, there were plans for kind of to stay at ABC, for Ted to move in a more Letterman-like direction.
From the Ruin Arledge Theater in New York City, where none of the anchors has barnacles, this is Late Night Line with Ted Koppel. Tonight, CNN newsman Aaron Brown, former National Security Advisor Dr. Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Paul Schaefer, and the ABC News Symphony. And now, a man who's more serious than his hair, Ted Koppel. Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to this new incarnation of Nightline. This program started out as America Held Hostage. It's ending up as Ted Koppel Held Hostage. No, I kid the good people at ABC. This network is doing so poorly, Drew Carey has to improvise his own ratings. No, thank you, but I swear to you, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have the slightest idea what that means. But I do know that we are in this beautifully refurbished theater, and we're going to have a very good time getting to the bottom of today's news. Paul, how...
Yes,
Paul
sir.
Schaefer, how are you, sir?
Ted, I am fine. I'm glad to be on ABC. I've now been on every network in the United States and Canada, except for Global.
Well, Global?
Yeah, it's a Canadian thing. Yeah. It's a swinging little syndication setup.
Paul Schaefer, you are totally steeped in show business.
Well, Ted, let me just say, for my daughter's bat mitzvah,
yes,
we are building a green room in the temple, because...
But, Paul, yeah, do you follow the news at all?
I love the news.
You do?
I love the news.
And then I have the feeling I'm being set up for something here.
No, they don't write for me on this show either.
All right, well, that at least is reassuring. Our first guest tonight is a one-time, sometime occupant of this chair. He was also the very popular host of ABC's virtually unwatched all-night newscast, and he's now enjoying great success over at CNN, hosting his own broadcast, even though it's on cable. Please welcome my friend, Mr. Aaron Brown. Aaron, thank you, sir, for coming uptown to visit with us.
Ted, it is so difficult for me to believe how this show has changed. There are colognes on the dressing room toilet.
There are indeed. And there's Irish coffee at the snack table.
Yes, it is impossible to not notice that.
Aaron, you've been on the air at CNN ever since September 11th of last year. Mm-hmm. Like this broadcast, your career was born in crisis. Now, 6 months on, you're changing with the times.
That's right, Ted. And I have to say, that's just also a perfectly written introductory sentence.
Well, you are too kind.
But yet, it's hard to maintain a feeling of alarm and crisis 6 months after the heartbreak and devastation of 9/11. If our lives didn't list back toward normal, we'd all go mad. Mm-hmm. So, yes, given the more competitive news environment we now live in, Ted, it wouldn't feel right in that war to be a conscientious objector.
Well, Aaron, you are no slouch when it comes to writing your ad-libs yourself. But to pursue the point about competition, opposite you are Greta Van Susteren on Fox and former presidential unhopeful Alan Keyes on MSNBC.
That's correct, Ted. And if Mr. Keyes were the one who was beating me in the ratings, I'd probably be sitting here right now wearing an ugly patterned sweater and gesticulating with my hands a lot more.
But in fact, you are losing viewers to your one-time colleague, mm-hmm. Suddenly monominous Greta.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Well, this sounds like an audience that would appreciate onomatopoeia. But yes, Ted, that is correct. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, in the old days, maybe we would have dealt with her challenge by being more serious than her, do a more thoughtful broadcast.
Well, in all fairness, not a major challenge in itself.
You've seen her show.
No.
But this being the 21st century, mm-hmm. Ted, the people at CNN felt, and I had to agree, that we had to meet the competition head on. So yesterday afternoon I had, and this is very awkward for me to say this, I had some eye work done.
You didn't.
I did. Boy, I brought a before picture for you.
This is unreal.
Well, here's the part I really did have a little trouble with, Ted. We videotaped the surgery, and it's our segment 7 5-part series all next week. And,
yeah.
Now, again, Aaron, we do speak as old friends, mm-hmm. and this is a question that did come up frequently in the Van Susteren case. Are you sure it was only eye work?
I swear to you, Ted, nothing but just a minor tune-up mm-hmm. around the corners of my eyes.
Yeah, but to tell you the truth, Aaron, something's different around the mouth, too, isn't it?
I don't know, Ted. Maybe it's a strain of saying a headline please about 5 or 6 times a night.
Well, that is your new trademark phrase, isn't it? Favor us with it just one more time, if you would.
All right. Ted Koppel, a headline, please. There you go.
All right, now, what's the prognosis, Aaron? Are you going to have more of this type of thing?
Ted, I seriously hope not. I hope this was an aberration and not the start of a process. Let me just say, I hope Fox doesn't put Geraldo Rivera on opposite me, because I really don't feel like going out in the field and having my crew start shooting at me.
Aaron, stay with us if you can. Our next guest is a most distinguished scholar and practitioner in the field of international relations. He was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, and he's a longtime friend of this broadcast. Please welcome Dr. Zbigniew Brzezinski. Dr. Brzezinski, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Ted. First time in this circumstance, though.
I should explain. We're going to have a little fun with Dr. Brzezinski tonight. We will discuss some of the more intractable trouble spots in the world. As you can see, he's suspended over a large tank, which we happen to have filled with oatmeal in the first of what we're calling a series of stupid professor tricks.
3, 4.
Stupid professor tricks. He's too smart to do those stupid professor tricks, yeah.
It looks like very good oatmeal, Ted.
Well, at these prices, I should hope so. All right, Doctor, let's start out with the very difficult situation between India and Pakistan.
All right, Ted, India is a regional superpower. Pakistan is a problematic regional fulcrum type nation. And between the Hindus and the Muslims.
Well, that's very well done, sir. I hope that isn't one of your good suits.
Well, It isn't anymore.
It certainly isn't. What about Central Africa, Dr. Mm-hmm. Brzezinski? Do we just have to wait for the Rwanda-Congo tribal conflict to burn itself out?
I don't think so, Ted, and let me tell you why. And the next thing you know, you've got another Robert Mugabe on your hands.
Or another Joseph Mobutu.
Well, I'm the one getting wet. Let me use my example.
All right, fair enough. Yeah. And finally, because we are running out of both time and oatmeal, give us a roadmap, if you can, of how we get from where we are now to peace in the Middle East.
Ted, the key is the Iranians. The Saudis are trying to steal a march on them at the moment, but into a bona fide peace process.
Yeah!
Dr. Brzezinski, thank you so much for participating in our first Stupid Professor Trick.
It was my pleasure, Ted.
Stupid Professor Tricks, yeah!
Thank you, Paul. And the transcript of Dr. Brzezinski's full comments will be on our website, so you can actually find out what's on his mind. What's on my mind is thanks to Aaron Brown,
thanks.
Dr. Brzezinski, and, of course, our own Paul Schaefer.
Yeah, thank you, Ted.
For helping me through this first broadcast. You know, change is never easy. We do hope to find this a more comfortable fit as time goes on. Tomorrow night, Dr. Anthony Fauci of the Centers of Disease Control and our list of the top 10 pedophile priests. That's our broadcast for this evening. Good night.
This has been ABC News Late Night Line. For a video recording of this program, call a friend who has TiVo. More people get their news from ABC News than is good for a healthy democracy. Good night.
Your vision isn't splendid, your vocabulary's weak. Your passport's been extended, but I've got some plans next week. You gotta go home. You gotta go home. You've overstayed your welcome and the thrill is really gone. You just gotta go. The English had their pudding, the Haitians had their coup. Parisians, they have style, so how did they get you? Go home. You gotta go home. It started at a picnic, now it's gonna rain. You just gotta go. Your mouth caught my attention, French lips remained to kill. Bottle hair in my ear in a city that broke my will. Go home. Gotta go home. A sexy month or two, now I'm stuck with you. You just gotta go. French lips remained to kill. Bottle hair in my ear and a city that broke my will. Go home. You gotta go home. A sexy month or two, now I'm stuck with you. You just gotta go. A poet's thing for drama, the charm of the insane. You've taken all my money, now just get on the plane. Go home. Gotta go home. got a special flair for broken love affairs. Just go. It's not that I don't care, but it's better over there. Just go. From the start, this wasn't wise. No longer now goodbyes. Just go. From heaven into hell, good riddance and farewell. Just go.
It was a year when reality TV continued to expand. CBS announced it was making a reality remake of the Beverly Hillbillies, looking for real hillbillies. And similarly, a reality remake of Green Acres, looking for C-list celebrities who were willing to move back to some rural nowhere. And of course, it was a year when the media were obsessed with the aftermath of 9/11. And then the media were obsessed with the media obsession.
Reality goes retro.
And big plans for an unhappy anniversary.
It's Extra Access tonight for the top of September 2002. Hi, everybody. I'm Pat Mungo.
And I'm Mike DeVere.
First, it was a reality show based on the Beverly Hillbillies. Then a reality show based on Green Acres. It seemed like the newest trend in television was turning the clock back in search of the future. Now the deja vu is happening all over again. And the results could be out of this world. They say men are from Mars. But reality producer Denny Stitch says he's looking to the red planet for both men and women for his new reality series based on the old hit TV show, My Favorite Martian.
We know they're out there. I mean, X-Files proved that. Now, thanks to this show and to a nationwide talent search, they can be in here.
Here is the abandoned Big Brother house in Studio City, California, given a $100,000 makeover. The idea is as simple as reality TV itself.
12 normal people are paired with two Martians, a guy and a babe. Yeah. They have to live together for 2 months. And each week, one of the normal guys gets voted out of the house by the Mars babe, and the Martian guy votes out one of the normal ladies.
But are there really Martians on planet Earth? And if so, are they ready for Sunday afternoons at 5 on TNN?
Our scientific advisor, Dr. Joyce Brothers, thinks so, and that's good enough for me and for TNN. The cool thing is that, according to our research, the Martians among us actually look like us. They don't even have funny-looking ears, despite what the original series suggested. But, you know, because we're doing reality. I don't want to be anti-diversity or anything, but to us, that similarity, that makes for great TV.
Look for the first reality show to admit it's using aliens to premiere just in time for the holidays.
And Pat, will we be seeing some of the original furnishings from the Big Brother house showing up on eBay?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Coming up, Dignity Gets an Attitude. Television remembers 9/11 as Extra Access Tonight rolls on.
Most of us experienced the horror of 9/11 on TV. So it's no surprise that television is going all out on the one-year anniversary of the event that changed everything except television. NBC is planning all-day coverage, and Tom Brokaw explained why at a press conference.
You know, I think in some ways America has drifted away from our focus after September 11. For some reason, the American people have allowed ourselves to be distracted by child kidnappings and business scandals. Maybe we in the media are partly to blame. What we're going to do on 9/11 is try for at least one day to reset the agenda back to what it was on the original 9/11 and try to lose our innocence all over again.
Over at CBS, Dan Rather revealed in an exclusive interview with Extra Access Tonight his network's plans for the big sad day.
People say to me, Dan, sir, with all due respect, are you going to show all of that footage over and over again? And straight from the spigot truth is that within the standards of journalistic responsibility and integrity that we at CBS News have always tried to talk about, we're going to own this story.
There will be special somber anniversary editions of many popular infomercials, There'll be a special edition of the new sitcom, Sucking Up, with no laugh track. And over at VH1, they're taping a live special, The Heart of the Music. We caught up with Dewey Gordon of the boy band superstars Boys R Us at the rehearsal of their new song.
Let's roll again.
Let's roll again.
Like we did last summer.
Summer, summer.
Let's roll again.
Let's roll again.
And rock no more.
Rock no more.
Let's roll again.
Let's roll again is a way of saying, America, let's get together again. And this time, let's do it for good.
Okay, that works. Let's think what's good.
Wherever on the dial you turn on September 11, there's no doubt about it. Television will be there with you.
That's it for today. But Extra Access tonight comes bouncing back tomorrow with the results of our EAT poll.
We asked, are you changed since 9/11? And the answers will make you think about the questions.
Till then, I'm Pat Mungo.
And I'm Mike DeVere.
So long from Culver City.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, there'll be more of the Year in Rebuke 2 weeks from today on Le Show. Next week, a special edition of Le Show for the holidays. A trip to Rio via New Orleans. What? You'll have to tune in to make sense of that. But that's it for this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns, as I say, next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the powerful shortwave transmitter of WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz, and around the world via the internet on your computer whenever you want it at two different locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And, well, it would be just like having a non-palindromic year if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at innerworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you through from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of SAS, Satellite Services, KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.